Special number 16721. Stay with Greg Reel 4.
Mr. Greg Reel 4. You moved to Bury St. Edmunds, you said, in the autumn, or early autumn of 1941, Mr.
That's
Greg.
Correct.
And you intimated that it was something to do with an armoured unit.
An armoured corps. Uh-huh.
And what were you expected to do then?
Well, we were joined this armoured division. The brigadier had got moved, and he wanted a battalion of Durhams, so he took. We had to go up with him. We were there about 3 or 4 weeks when he got transferred back. He got transferred back. We come back into that from that division. Now, then, very shortly after that, that armoured division went out to Singapore. Now, when that Armadale went out to Singapore, they were on a ship called Felix Roselle, a French troop carrier. Of course, Singapore was all up a height, and the lads, they got off that boat more or less, prisoners. So we missed that by the brigadier getting transferred back.
In the 2 or 3 weeks you were there, what were you doing?
Well, this is where I learned to drive Brent carriers. And, of course, in that division, the wagons, Blanco, and the tyres, and things like this, you know. But we were doing exercises, things like that. Laughing my heads off at the lads going out. Up the hill was land girls, you know, land army girls. And they were trying to get dates with them. And it was laughable to see the girls chasing them with their axes, you know, and things like this. But just a normal army routine, you know.
So you're really an infantry arm in an armoured division.
That's right, Dan.
Do you remember the number of the division or the name of it?
I could get on that phone up to Anik. It's funny. Life. But my daughter married a lad from Anik, and when I met his dad, he was a prisoner of war in Japan, and he was in this armoured division, and he was in the Northumberland Fusiliers. And when this boat was coming into Singapore, the Jap planes was prominent now. In the Northumberland Fusiliers, the man the machine guns, and they knocked 17 planes down. Now then, that boat, when they got off the boat, it managed to get out. And it got a bump, it was a steamboat, and it got a bump down, knocked one of the funnels off leg. But it managed to crawl back to India, got passed up, come into England, and changed into a diesel boat. Now then, it was called the Felix Roselle, and it was manned by the French Navy as a troop ship. Now then, after the war, when we come back from Burma, back home, this is the boat that we come back on, the Felix Roselle, and there's a big plaque in telling you about the Northumberland Fusiliers. And my daughter married a lad. If we hadn't have been transferred back to the second day, we would have been there. You know, and I think it's quite how things happen.
So you weren't at Bury St. Edmunds so long that
no,
you get
no,
really get into
no,
the
no,
place at
no,
all.
No, as I said, it's about a month.
Where were you housed in Bury?
We were in tents, bell tents. All sleeping foot to foot. But we're in camp there.
So you returned to the 6th Division?
To the 2nd Division.
2nd Division. 6th Brigade, yeah.
And it was very shortly after that the division moved to Cheltenham. Now this was when the DIF was preparing to go to abroad. And we got there just about Christmas of 42. And this is where we met the man himself, Churchill, coming, you know, in County Lane, Inspector Dwyer. We got all prepared for going out east, getting my shorts and tobies and things like that.
Did you know where you were going, other than the fact that of course you're getting this uniform?
The original that we made out was we were going down to Madagascar. Well, after we got on the boat and going down, there's a German sea unit in the path of the convoy, so that made a detour. We probably over towards America to go around it. But by the time we got down to Cape Town, it was too late. Then had withdrawn troops from some other area and sent them into to Madagascar to do the job. So when the British 2nd Div got down to Cape Town, well, they didn't know where, what they're going to do. So it was decided, India.
We'll come to India.
Uh-huh.
How long were you at Cheltenham?
Cheltenham, about two or three months. We had a Christmas in Cheltenham.
What were you basically doing there?
More or less the same. The army routine. I mean, you got the same brigadier, you know, that transferred in the Downs. He was in his club and they were making bets, and he was betting that the Dolomite Infantry could march 6 miles an hour. And they all took his bet on. And headquarter company, we were dragged in on it. And this is a forced march. Well, a forced march, you trotted from one telegraph pole to the other, then you marched, then trotted, you know. And I remember it happened on a Saturday morning, and we'd done it, hands down. The brigadier, if he could have given a medal, he would have given a medal. You know, little things like this. There was a exercise in the town, testing home guard, you know. Well, a lot of them were college lads. Of course, we had to go into the town, you know. Of course, the college lads were really setting a bow, you know, really laying it on, eh? So the lads were saying, well, if they're going to be like that, you know, and had some fun and games like with the college lads. I was halfway into college with the rent carrier on the steps. But had some fun and games with the local people. And this was right on the Christmas. And we got invited out to houses, you know, to the dinners and all that. There was snow on the bottom there. I remember that we doing this exercise, that is collapsible salt boats, you know. And they had me down in the park pond. Of course, there was a thin layer of ice on, you know, breaking the ice, but We got in these boats and paddling across, and the thin ice, the canvas.
Split the canvas.
And we're like ducks in the water. So I had some laughs, you know. Well, in the army, you get moments when you really. I pray to God many a time. And then after, when you think, well, they have a pretty good laugh, like, you know.
Had there been any changes in officers of the battalion by the time you got to Cheltenham? It's still the same commanding officer.
Same. I know that. When I joined the battalion, it was VA. I think he was a Dutch and a lovely fella. And getting back to Brilliant, then, when I was on about the guards, a stick man, you know. I was stick man twice. And at night, the end of the day, you're sitting in the passage, front of the fire, you know, reading a book, and he used to come out there, and he's uniform, jacket off, you know, and his braces, and he used to sit down and light his pipe, and, you know, not just like father and son. I always liked that man.
He was a good trainer, evidently.
A nice fella, but when we got to Cheltenham, I don't know whether he had a bad turn or what, but we got a new champion.
Who was that?
Names. Yeah, just kind of think. At Bransworth Castle, there's a church outside. If you go in there, there's big plaques, you know. Charlie Veers is there. There's two or three officers that we lost over the years, you know.
So you got this new officer, and what was he like?
They're all good, good officers. Well, if you had to pay respect to them, you had to respect them. They had a job to do, the same as we had.
Were they from the Durhams themselves, these officers, or were they other regiments?
I couldn't say offhand. They go to these colleges. And you got some officers who were lads like yourself that had worked their way up. You got others that had come from Sandhurst and things like this, and they were, you know, some were good. You got the odd one, like.
What qualities did you look in an officer, in a good officer?
Well, you on exercises and things like that, you know, I think, well, he's good, he knows what he's. And you got others, you know, there's. You thought, well, we're in trouble with this. Of course, when you get, as I say, when you get into action, this it's a different thing altogether. It's a different thing altogether.
Had your mortar officers changed in the time that we're talking about?
In England, like before I went to across to India. We had the same officers. We had one lad, he was about 7 foot, and we used to call him Little John. He was a school teacher, good officer.
Do you remember his name?
Little John. But he was like a second in command. The officer we had was a chap called Clegg. He worked at Dinner Taffy's at Chester Street. Nice fella. On route marches, smokers would get a tab off him. Non-smokers like myself, you got a sweet. Mm-hmm. Later on, I'll tell you about the thing about Mr. Clegg.
Were you still at Sergeant McLean as your...
Yes, I.
Sergeant Major.
Sergeant Major McLean.
What was he like as a Sergeant Major?
Oh, he's a good lad. If you, done your job right, But shortly after we left Cheltenham to go abroad, we got another sergeant in charge, Crozier, this Sergeant Crozier, the Boston woodchopper. He had spent time in America in the woodyards, chopping trees and that, But he was canny fella. He could ride a motorbike. He could get to places where some of them would lose you, He was you found out who was good and who wasn't.
About the characters within your mortar detachment, who were the men that stand out in your mind that you were serving with in the unit?
Well, in the mortars, there was a few characters. There was two brothers, Purvis brothers, and they were regular soldiers that had been in they were in the army just coming up to the war, the regular army. They belonged to Tynwald. And like good brothers, they were always having a bit tiff, Those two lads, one from Seam, another lad from Heaven, little Smash Burns, and this Sharman, and they just do a lot of entertainment, singing and that, Great.
Did you receive any promotions yourself whilst in England?
No. No, I was offered, but I didn't want responsibility. When I got to India, I was driver mechanic. We were sent to the Remy workshops on a course, and I was driver mechanic. Of course, would be driving a carrier, you've done your own, with the carriers, with the in action, that you've done your own repairs, to keep yourself going. Even one or two of the lads, I had them in, showing them how to start it up. Put it in gear, just move it, just in case I got knocked out. I used to say this is just in case. If I'm thumped, you're not sitting, how the hell would it give you a bit instruction? I had a good life with the pals. My best pal, getting back to Bridland, and we got a young lad, he come out of the glasshouse, Percy, and it had it rough in the detention. But he got put in our platoon. And I just got attached to him. And he used to say, "You're the best pal I've ever had. You've kept me on this right path." Now, that same lad, later on, at Kahima, he got a sniper, got him.
Yes, you get very close to people, then you lost them in that way.
This is it.
Comradeship was very important.
It was. I mean, I remember the fella that brought him in on a stretcher, and he was lying there, and his arm was off. And I just put it alongside him, and I give him a sick tab, and he says, "Is my arm all right?" And I said, "Hey, right there, look. I said, if that's your arm, you're all right." And in myself, I knew that. But hard things.
When you left Cheltenham, when did you say you left Cheltenham for?
What was it? Be about February, May.
This is what, 1942?
42, beginning of 42.
Where did you go to sail? Where did you sail from?
Glasgow, on the Empress of Canada.
Was the big convoy that left?
Yes, it was a good-sized convoy.
What was the accommodation like on the boat?
Oh, they were good, you know.
Hammocks. Crowded?
Well, you know, you could make yourself comfortable, you know. You just fit yourself in.
Had you had an embarkation leave before you left?
Oh, I've had a leave before we went.
How did your family take the fact you were now going abroad?
Well, you know, tears. Because it's just my mum at home and two sisters dying. But I was 14 when I lost my dad. But you had your moments.
It was very hard for families to see, in your situation particularly, you'd been the only son, going off in war and not knowing might happen to them.
I mean, like, say, after Dunkirk, you know, when I got leave, I'm coming down the street, and the neighbour shouted, "Mrs. Gregg, here's your Eddie." And I swear, my mother cleared the gate, and she was up the street, and she was, you know, feeling my body, and said, "Are you all right? Have you been wounded?" And all this, you know. And tears, you know.
Did she write to you regularly?
Oh, yes, I got the parcel with bits of wool and needles and thread and stuff which had stacks of, you know.
How important is mail from home to a soldier?
Oh, it helps. It does. I see. There's an aunt of mine at Birtley, she used to send us a cake. But they're not around now, you know.
So you set sail, and you're as you say, you're on hammocks. How did you take to hammocks?
Well, after you fell off two or three times, you know, you got the knack. Or you just spread it on the deck and lay down the bottom, you know.
Did you sleep on the same deck as you ate?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
With tables?
Yeah. Oh, you had to roll your hammock up and everything ordered, you know, ordinarily.
And did they teach you this process of how to roll your hammock properly and
taught you? Well, it just come automatically, you know.
What do you recall of the actual journey itself?
Well, I remember, I don't know what it was, might have been just two or three days, but I think it was about a week when we left. It was level, like glass. And yeah, fella, I brought my inside up not once, dozens of times. And it started getting a bit rough. And I thought, good. Anyway, I was down there by the engine room in the scuttles somewhere, like rolling. Bit to see what I was just doing, I couldn't care. And this little steward come up, and he was just like Popeye. "What's the matter, lad?" I says, "I'm bloody dying." He says, "Hey, just stay there." He says, "I'll fix you up." And he brought me the big pot, you know, full of tea, no milk and sugar in. And he says, "Yeah, get that down here." And he says, "I bet within an hour you'll be defying the sea." And I drank that pot until he says, "No, get yourself up there. Go on, and you'll be right as rain." When I got up there, you know, the sergeant, I could feel myself getting better, like, and the sergeant, "Where the hell have you been, Greg? We've been looking for you 2 or 3 days." And I was put on submarine watch on the bridge. And the ship was like this, and I was, as it was going down, I was putting my extra 10 stone behind, you know. I was defying the sea, Then after that, it was great. We didn't row much, as you know, even on a boat. Round and round the decks, thump, 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 thump. Lifeboat drill. You went to bed at night, and you know, it's those monster convoy destroyers and Templeton Canter, it was, what do you call it? The head of the convoy was, you know, the Templeton Canter was the leading headquarter boat, like sort of business. And you got up the next morning, and the destroyer's gone, and the crew would say, oh, they went off, they got a emergency call out, like, so probably a submarine or something like that, you know. Then, just like that, you'd see them come in and back alongside.
Must have been a marvellous sight.
The convoys, there's a line up behind us, Dorchester Castle. And when you were at the back end, you were just looking at the front of it, you know, and it was sinking in, and you were looking at its deck. Wonderful. This big naval gun, and a certain way over they were testing the guns, the gun crew, you know, like, and when they were doing a bit shoot, that they opened all the doors and windows, because the first time it shattered all the windows in the boat, you know. But we had Jimmy Denmark, Newcastle footballer, you know. You've heard of Jimmy Denmark. He was one of the top footballers in the county, Newcastle. Lad. He used to give talks on his football. His legs went short for thousands of pounds, you know, Jimmy. And he was in the Durhams in the 2nd Battalion.
So you had talks by people during the journey?
That's right, to kill to help you. You weren't bored, like, you know.
You mentioned one duty there that you had, the spotting for submarines.
That's right, aye.
What other duties did you do on the ship?
Well, it was a mess on the mess deck. You had to clean up and things like that. The ship's crew was doing the ship side of it, like, but you got orderly jobs and sentries, you know, different parts of the boat, more or less aircraft, things like this. You played a little part, you know.
What was the food like on the ship?
Well, it was pretty good, you know. Good average.
Was it as good as what you'd had on land?
Oh, near enough.
And was the canteen?
There's a nuffy. You could go and get a pint or whatever. Well, they looked after you. But wonderful. I enjoyed my voyage, say.
It would, of course, be a new experience.
I mean, the convoy wrapped round you, you know, was wonderful. Then when we got down near Africa, we called in at Freetown. And when you were near the coast, lightning storms, you know, at night, and the flash of light was fantastic.
How long were you in Freetown?
Just a few hours.
Did you have the natives coming out in their boats?
Oh, yes, the bum boats. You know, of course, some of the clever lads were dropping lemonade buttons away, you know. Silly.
But the language of the bum boat boys can be quite special, can't it?
Doesn't matter what country you go, there's always somebody you can get by, you know, with the language. You know.
What were they trying to sell you?
Well, beads and knives and things like this, you know, little trinkets. But you had to put your money in and drop the basket down, you know. Then some of them, they were taking your money and away like it. But there was not a lot of it going on. Like.
Coming back to life on board the ship, it was a very long voyage and it must have been quite boring at times. Yeah. How did you keep occupied leisure-wise?
Well, books, reading. As I was going to say, there's a Jarrah lad, this Joe actually, he was a busker in Civvy Street. He played the accordion. And he used to lie there. If he was mortal drunk, the more drunk he was, the better he played, you know. And we used to have good old sing songs and things like that.